Just back from Washington, D.C., Cap Radio's Ben Adler, who checked in with California's House Republicans. On Inside, we'll check in with Ben, who has some observations about the power dynamic on Capitol Hill compared to the Capitol in Sacramento. Then, at B Street Theater, the new play written and performed by three members of the company, Stephanie Alfoles, Amy Kelly, and Tara Sissom. It's a comedy that's partly based on a real-life camping trip the women took. They'll join me in the studio. It'll be a lot of fun. The play is called Treatment. Later in the hour, Chef Michael Tiemann from Empress Tavern and Mother, and singer-songwriter Justin Trosper from the 90s band Unwound and other bands, have a pop-up music and food event tonight in Sacramento. They're here to share some of their music and the story of their collaboration. I'm Beth Ruyak. It's Friday, and Inside is coming up next. From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. California's congressional delegation is getting an earful from constituents this year, especially when any of them come back to town for town hall meetings. Capital Public Radio's Ben Adler was in Washington, D.C. this week and made a stop on Capitol Hill. In this week's Capital Chat, Ben debriefs us from our Capitol Bureau in Sacramento. Hi, Ben.
Good morning.
You had a late night of flying back across the country, didn't you?
There are days I'm glad I work in radio. Let's put it that way.
I do want to get to the Washington, D.C. visit, but I think we should start with some numbers that were just released. We have unemployment figures for California, right?
We do. 19,000 new jobs added by California in March, and the unemployment rate continues to drop bit by bit by bit. Started the year at 5.1% in January, now down to 4.9%. One thing to temper that with, however, is that the civilian labor force is essentially unchanged. So while unemployment is dropping, the fact that the labor force is only up a few thousand from the start of the year to now could mean that some of this is just folks leaving the workforce, not looking for work.
All right. Any details on the sectors where those 19,000 jobs were?
I don't have that right in front of me. I do have Sacramento stats,
okay,
though. So the Sacramento region's unemployment rate was 5% in March. That's not seasonally adjusted. So the best comparison is a year ago, it was 5.6%. So a significant drop. 5,500 new jobs over the last month, but again, not seasonally adjusted. And I just want to show you the unemployment rate for the four counties in the region and how they range. The lowest unemployment is in Placer County, 4.2%. Then it's 4.8% in El Dorado, 5.1% in Sacramento, and 6% in Yolo County. So a pretty wide range over that four-county region. The largest increase of jobs came in government over the last month, particularly local government. Do I have the drop? I think I have the drop here. The biggest drop came, let's see, manufacturing was the biggest.
Okay, I would have guessed government or construction in this area to be the area of strength for jobs.
Yeah.
That's where some of the growth has been. Okay, sorry to not spend more time there, but I do want to transition to your trip to Washington, D.C. You were actually there for other reasons, but you did manage to connect with, as I said, California's House Republicans, or at least their staff members, correct?
Yes, I was already there for a public radio board meeting, and it was spring break for Congress, and so the members weren't there, but the staff were, and they had a little more time to talk, a little more leisurely time. And so it was nice to kind of just go to a few offices. And I should say I focused my visits on California's Republican members of Congress, because what I have been interested in and kind of fascinated by is just how different blue California and red Washington are for, you know, not just the messages coming out of it, the politics, but just the feel of the two. And they are so far apart right now. Certainly the country is split, and Washington, D.C., the people who live there, heavily Democratic, and a lot of the folks who live immediately around Washington, D.C., Maryland and Virginia, fairly Democratic too. But as far as who's in charge and the mood, how folks feel, it's diametrically opposite.
So we'll use that as a backdrop. Who did you meet? Where did you meet? And what was the goal of the conversations?
Well, you know, my conversations weren't on record, so I'm just going to say that, I will say I met with House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy's office, and then I met with a handful of other Republican members, including a couple from our area as well, but just from throughout California. And, you know, a lot of the things that came up, you know, they want to know what California's going to do with the Sanctuary State Bill, SB 54, from Senate President Pro Tem Kevin DeLeon. We're here in California interested in what Congress is going to do about health care and immigration. So that those topics pretty much dominated the conversation. You know, some of the offices I spoke with, you know, the members of Congress probably have challenging reelection bids next fall. But that all depends on who turns out to vote, as we've seen in California and throughout the country. Voters that stay home can disproportionately influence the results of the election, whether it's Democrats or left-leaning independents staying home in 2016 or, Democrats staying home in 2014 in the midterms, or Republicans not turning out as much, or a lot of the folks who came out to vote for Donald Trump who don't typically vote. Maybe had they come out in previous elections, Republicans would have done better than previous presidential elections, I should say. Republicans might have done better than they did.
Well, over the past week, that special election happened in Georgia. So there was a surge of excitement for the Democrats after the Democrat got the most votes heading to the primary that will happen this summer. So you're talking to the staffs of California Republicans. Did they talk about that special election, and did you get reaction from them?
I mean, we talked a little bit about it, but it wasn't the dominating story. It's worth pointing out, and, you know, obviously, national politics isn't my beat, so I know what I read. But based on what I read, it's far from sure that Democrats are going to win that Georgia seat in the runoff, because there were many Republican candidates and only one major Democratic candidate. And now it's going to be one-on-one in a district that did vote for Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton, if narrowly. Democrats appear to be gaining in that district compared to previous elections, but, you know, the Democrat did get less than 50%. And so I think a Democrat would say, look, we've got a shot, but really what we see in the Kansas special election for Congress and the Georgia one is Democrats are more energized and turning out more than they typically would. But these are not the districts that necessarily Democrats would be focusing on to win control of the House. Republicans would say Donald Trump is president and we're still winning these seats. So it's up to you whose spin you believe.
But for somebody like Daryl Issa from California, where the momentum is going and what the voters are feeling, seeing, thinking could dramatically change his future as a politician and what happens in that district.
Oh, for sure. And that district in Southern Orange County, Northern San Diego County on the coast was not seen as being competitive at the start of the previous election cycle. And then the Democratic challenger came shockingly close in the primary, and Democrats invested a bit in the general, and it was close. But Issa pulled it out. It was one of the closer House races in the country. And Issa is going to be running again, and he's going to have a tough race again. Other Democrats who are going to see tough races, Jeff Denham and David Valadao in the Central Valley. And we see Democrats targeting, also Steve Knight in the Santa Clarita area, just north, Antelope Valley area, just north of Los Angeles, around the Grapevine. And then Democrats are targeting other members of Congress in Orange County, because Orange County went for Hillary Clinton. Orange County, not known as a Democratic county, went blue last election. I'm not convinced that it would have gone for Hillary Clinton had there been a more traditional, conventional Republican candidate. My sense is that Trump's biggest base of support in California, and his base, I don't believe has left him so far, even in blue California, is more inland and rural, whereas Orange County is suburban. And yes, the demographics are changing to some extent, and it is perhaps getting more Democratic, but I'm not convinced that, a Marco Rubio would have also lost Orange County to Hillary Clinton last fall. My hunch is he probably would have won.
Did you happen to see this article by Public Policy Polling about a recent poll? It does address what you're talking about, that Democrats have enthusiasm for 2018, whether or not that translates to reality.
I did not see that one. I believe it's a Democratic polling firm, but I think their point is well taken. You saw how Republicans got very energized early in President Obama's administration and remained energized to the point that in the midterms, that energy helped them do fairly well, whereas Democrats don't turn out in midterms or have not typically. The last time Democrats turned out strong in midterms, it was 2006. George W. Bush had been president for 6 years, and Democrats were able to retake control of the House and Senate. And they held it for they held the House for 4 years. They shed all their control in the House in 2010, and then they held on to the Senate a few years later, but then they lost that in 2014.
Well, one thing that's interesting about this, the headline is Democrats have big enthusiasm for 2018, but when you read down to the numbers, 63% of the Democrats who were polled say they're very excited about voting in the 2018 election. But 52% of Republicans express that sentiment. So both groups are over 50%. It I think, reflects a big engagement in the process and a desire to be part of those midterm elections. And that could have been the headline, I think.
Yeah. And a couple of thoughts on that. One is that, President Trump's base is highly energized and they are active and they volunteer and they will make calls if the president activates them to do so. Even here in California, there remains to this day a volunteer list of 300,000 people who I'm told made 1.5 million calls into swing states last fall. I'm sure some of that paid off in states like Wisconsin and Michigan and in Pennsylvania. So there's that. There's also the fact that in midterms, Democrats historically don't turn out as well as Republicans, like I said. And then finally, I think Democrats turned out to vote in I haven't crunched the numbers and people far smarter than me have. But my sense of it is it's not that Hillary Clinton didn't win the longtime Democrats other than the Reagan Republican Democrats who crossed over for Trump. But it's the folks who are the left leaning independents or maybe folks in California who registered as Democrat to vote in the primary and in other states registered as Democrat to vote in the primary for Bernie Sanders. My hunch is that many of those Democrats or those voters are the ones that stayed home. And so the question is, will they turn out to vote? It's not clear that they are thrilled with how the Democratic Party is challenging Trump right now. And I think an example is Dianne Feinstein, who the U.S. senator, the longtime U.S. senator of California, held a couple of town halls this week. And she came under criticism from the left for not doing more to oppose Trump and for not backing single payer health care in California.
You're listening to Ben Adler. He's just back from Washington, D.C., and he's joining me today from our Capitol Bureau in Sacramento. Let me go down through a list of a couple items and just get some quick responses from you, Ben.
Sure.
There was news yesterday of what some people are calling a breakthrough in a new health care plan, and the president talked about it. So you were out there. What was the buzz and reaction there?
Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of how last fall the Democrats in the California legislature and Governor Brown were said they were unable to get the next big climate change bill through, and they called it off. And then with everything quiet behind the scenes, they worked. They found a way to get the bill through. And I can't help but think that maybe something similar is happening in Washington, D.C. However, I'm pretty confident based on what I read and some of my own reporting that the House Republicans are not there yet in getting the votes. This breakthrough that is being talked about, it appears to be dealing with getting some buy-in from the Freedom Caucus. And although there's one member of a moderate caucus called the Tuesday Group that is quoted in stories as saying that they're in on the deal or that they're good with it or something like that, it's not clear that he's bringing his caucus of moderate Republicans along. And based on my reporting, I don't think moderate Republicans are ready to vote for it. And so I don't think the votes are there, nor does NPR's reporting team, as I was listening to them, watching them tape the NPR Politics podcast yesterday at the mothership. The sense of the people who do this for a living is that it's not there yet.
The votes aren't there to pass the House.
Yet. Okay. But that could change. And there's no language yet. Everyone's on recess. Next week, you have the 100-day mark, and you've got a potential government shutdown if funding isn't approved. And so what happens first?
Back to some California news and politics. The California Chamber of Commerce released a list of job-killing bills. It's a really long list, Ben.
It usually is in California. There, especially early in the year, you've got a lot of bills that the business community feels would be very harmful to the business climate. And some of these are bills that we've seen before, like the expansion of job-protected family leave for, you know, new parents to take time off. And that's a bill that the chamber has successfully fought off a couple of times, including getting a veto from Governor Brown last year. And Governor Brown certainly has been willing to sign bills that have not been the favorite of the business community, but he tends to do his whole paddle a bit to the left, paddle a bit to the right. It's interesting that any targeted tax increase on a specific industry got the job killer label. Whether that's a tax on high earners or the soda tax,
right,
or even the diaper and tampon sales tax exemption, that because the governor vetoed it last year because there wasn't an offsetting revenue source and it would have cost the state general fund money, the authors of the bill instead are trying to increase the excise tax on distilled spirits. And so that, the Cal Chamber feels, is a targeted tax on an industry and is on the job killer list.
You know, I'm going to amend what I said because I count on this list and it's 22, 23 bills, but the legislature passes 700 to 800 bills in a session. So 2023 as job killer bills probably isn't that long of a list. And in the context of things, it's pretty small.
And of the 700 to 800 or even more that get passed, there are hundreds more that are introduced that do not pass.
Yeah.
I should also mention I left off one big one when I mentioned the list a few minute ago. Single-payer health care is on that list.
Yes. And in fact, next week, one of the first committee votes comes up. I believe it's on Tuesday, and there will be a march, a lot of activity at the Capitol, and we're going to see an increase in communications from both sides on that one. One more thing to talk about next week is Sacramento's Cap to Cap trip. And I'm mentioning that because every year it's significant and it's a leadership opportunity for the people involved.
Yeah, you know, I kind of wish I was in D.C. next week and would be able to catch up with folks from the Sacramento region. But
right,
you know, travel schedule didn't work out that way. But yeah, I mean, it's Sacramento. It's the Sacramento region's time to lobby on the Hill. And regions go through this each year and sectors go through it each year. I think, you know, I saw the tech industry is descending on Washington sometime next week. So that'll be pretty busy. You know, and it's the same in Sacramento. You'll have local delegations that come up and you'll have different interest groups and advocacy groups that come up and hold their lobbying days and meet with lawmakers and hold their rallies outside the Capitol. So, you know, in many ways, California's capital and America's capital are not so different, except, of course, for who's in charge.
And you get on a plane, Ben, and you can go back and forth in just a couple hours.
I wish it was just a couple hours. Yeah. I pity the California members of Congress who have the longest commute other than Hawaii and Alaska in
right,
the nation.
Well, thanks for joining us, getting up this morning for this week's Capitol Chat. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Anytime.
That is Ben Adler. There's more state government news at capradio.org. You're listening to Insight on Capitol Public Radio. You're listening to Insight on Capitol Public Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. B Street's founder Buck Busfield was encouraging some of his very funny actors to write a script. Three actresses in the B Street Company went camping to try to come up with some ideas. And guess what? They did. And opening this weekend on B Street's main stage is a new comedy titled Treatment with some of those actual camping stories. In the studio to tell me the rest of the story or correct what I've already said is Tara Sisson. Hi, Tara.
Hi.
Glad to have you here. Stephanie Elthols.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Stephanie. And Amy Kelly.
Hello.
The hi, easiest
Amy.
Name of all three
that
of
is.
Us to say.
So how was I? That's how the story was told to me. Was it correct?
Pretty close.
Yeah, that's spot on. We were commissioned to write a show. We thought we wanted to write something that was truthful. So we thought, let's go camping and actually figure out what we want to write the play about. And we had so much fun doing it. It was like, wow, camping is actually a really highly theatrical setting. Let's just set it in a campsite.
And it's cheap. It's one location. Just a campsite.
Yeah. One of you had been camping a lot, or more than the others.
I had gone an excessive amount of time, excessively.
But they didn't necessarily believe you that you were so experienced.
Because it was just a very recent thing, and which we have incorporated into the show. But like, she got really into camping, and so all of a sudden, she's like a mountain man. But brings an insane amount of like equipment with her.
So you're comfortable.
Right.
Then she's really camping, Stephanie.
Yeah, you're right. That's true. I should never have doubted her.
I used to not like camping and would be scared of it. And then all of a sudden I just found a newfound interest. So I just camped that whole summer.
Where did you camp? Where'd you go?
Dutch Flats?
It's off Immigrant Gap. Am I saying this right?
Yes. Yeah, it's like literally just this tiny little spot right off the highway that you wouldn't know about. And I don't think it's on any map.
I found it by accident.
Because, and then tried to get us there.
Yeah, which...
There's a lovely historic cabin back there and some wonderful trails.
And then you drive down this road that maybe seems like you're lost. And I felt like I was for a while. And finally, I saw a car driving up and I reached my head out and they probably knew what I was going to ask. I was like, is there a campsite over there?
Were they wondering why you were talking like that?
Is there a campsite over there? Because So I was the one that got there first, but it was beautiful. And it was by this creek. It was amazing.
Yeah. You went camping to try to work on what to write a script about.
Right. Yeah. And Tara came into our writing room where we were writing and said, hey, guys, what if we just made camping the play? And we were like, oh,
was that while you were camping?
No, it was
after.
It was before.
I thought maybe you had created a writing room in the forest. I was looking for that.
I did. So these two, I don't want to
give
too much away about their personal proclivities. They were not necessarily always in the mindset.
There was some whiskey involved. Yeah. We could say that.
So Stephanie is kind of separating herself here as maybe the better camper. Do you hear that?
Maybe the smarter camper.
I was the documentarian
for the actual
secretary.
She took the notes.
Down everything.
She was like a court reporter.
Yeah. So I'd be like in the corner, like, Amy is chasing Tara around the fire.
Amy just flashed some campers.
Yeah, stuff like that. So I had all these notes when we got back.
The show you ended up with, though, has the word heartwarming or heartfelt in every description.
Yeah.
So sometime in this camping trip, you got deep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we did. We had like a ceremony around the fire, and we started talking about stuff.
Just about stuff we may not have known about each other. I mean, we've been friends for a long time. They're very close, and I became close with them. But there's some stuff that maybe we didn't know about each other. So we just kind of got into that a little
bit. Yeah, I was like, you know, let's share secrets. I want to know something that I don't know about you. But you know, that was what actually happened. The play has since evolved, and there is a heartwarming element, not just our friendships, but the story that we tell, which is it centers around, you know, I think a really heartwarming detail, which is that we're there to spread the ashes of one of the characters' mother, who is now gone. And in that, we get to explore mother-daughter relationships between friends, and how people deal with grief, which is often very different, sometimes bittersweet, funny ways. So I think that's the heart element, and hopefully that comes across. Is we ultimately want to have a good story, but we want audiences walking away going, oh my gosh, I can't believe they just did that. And I think we've succeeded in that.
Yes, I agree.
That's Tara Sissom. She has the role of Jane.
Yes.
Right? And Stephanie Alfels has the role of Roxanne.
Yep.
And Amy Kelly is Patricia in the show.
Yep.
So you're not exactly yourselves in the show.
Well, interestingly enough, those are all of our middle names.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So because we wanted a lot of ourselves in the characters, but we also wanted to maintain some distance because the more revealing stuff, you know, hopefully people would say, like, well, what's true, what's not? We're not going to tell you. But so we wanted to be connected to our characters, but also maintain a little bit of distance. So
names. Actual camping trip wasn't exactly like the play, we are dealing with it as the people we are. So it really is, I think, us, obviously, with some
be a good setup to go into a scene the play because it is at the camping trip.
Right.
And I think it's fairly on in the show, too. So this is a scene from the B Street Theater's new play, Treatment, which opens this weekend.
Rox, this is a ridiculous amount of camping equipment. You don't really need all this stuff.
Excuse me. You brought a picnic set in a wicker suitcase, and I'm fairly certain I saw a vacuum under the back seat.
Rox, don't argue with someone who brings a crock pot camping.
Hey, I go camping all the time. I've been camping 10 times just in the last few months.
And how many times in the last decade?
10.
Ha.
Shut up. I've fallen in love with this. It's something I'm really good at, something I enjoy. And what are you doing?
Well, Patricia, I thought it might be fun to have some snacks. I don't know. It sounded like a good idea at the time.
You guys, when we do the ash thing, you know we can't leave food out. It has to go in the bear box. You can't keep it in the car. It has to go in the bear box. Food, bear box.
Okay, but where do we put the food?
I'm serious, you guys.
We know.
Seriously, guys, food goes in the bear box.
We got it.
I'm just trying to be helpful.
Well, Pat.
Don't call me Pat.
You're being annoying and controlling.
I'm just trying to keep you safe.
Well, you're doing that mothering thing. You're not my mother, and you're sure as hell not her mother, so stop telling us what to do.
You. Time out.
That was Tara Jane Sissom and Stephanie Roxanne Alpols and Amy Patricia, not Pat. Don't call me Pat.
Don't call me Pat.
In a scene from Treatment. This project is a few firsts for B Street. This is actually the first time that a play has been written for the main stage by someone other than Busfield himself. So when he went to you and said, create a script, did he think this was going to land on the main stage?
Yes.
And that was the goal. Okay.
I believe so.
I think he was always commissioned for the main stage for the three of us to write semi-autobiographical piece starring us and for this time slot.
That's a lot of expectation.
I know.
We know.
I think I fainted.
It's like a product or bust.
How about three of you in the writing process? You know, who takes the lead, who yields, whose stuff gets cut?
Well,
it's hard. If you were to have a 3-person writing team, you'd probably be writing for, you know, something that had a very large cast. Certainly not just 3 people. If you had 3 writers, it'd be for like a 10-person show. And certainly not for every writer to be writing their own semi-autobiographical piece. It was actually really challenging to have 3 cooks in the kitchen that are so close to the material that are then going to take
and
it on.
And close to each other.
Yeah, and stubborn, then, all of
and
us.
And to take it on to move it to the stage. That was a unique challenge. All of us contributed stuff that ended up on the cutting room floor, and that's theater, good writing, and editing. But
Tara was the one who was the first one to be like, okay, we got to cut like 60 pages. And I mean, our first act was like 140 pages.
And then
it's like an O'Neill, like 7-hour show.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I'd like to hear that version, actually.
Me too. Well, because I wanted it to be like a drawing room play where like we just talked about ideas and Tara was like, nope.
It was like coffee and cigarettes for days.
I was great. Like, let's just shoot out of the cannon and have a blast and play within our wheelhouse, write types that we want to play and make it fun and fast. And we had to trim a lot of fat, which was a lot of the reality of that night.
But not necessarily theatrical.
The heart of it.
Yeah. It wasn't, there.
And it's not all material from the camping trip.
No.
I think you said that.
No.
And it's not just a women's show.
That would be a little boring.
No.
No, this is a person. We deal with people issues. Betrayal, jealousy, secrets, grief, love, heartache.
Partnerships.
Exploration, drugs, alcohol, partying, woods, nature. It's all in there.
But I do think it's important. Because this idea, I think, that women in the arts is kind of being talked about in a very big conversation right now. You know, every woman who wins an award now is talking about, like, see, people want to see stories about women. And so while, yes, this is a story for everyone, I do think it's important that female friendships are some of the most beautiful, complex relationships that exist, I think. And I really, really think we captured the intricacies of what it is to.
I agree. The
highs
and lows.
To be a woman who's best friends with a woman.
The fights, the tears, the laughter. I mean, it's all there.
Fighting for alpha female. Yeah. It all happens.
Yeah.
And we all switch up. That was really beautifully said. And I think that doesn't exclude that anybody could understand or connect to that.
Right.
The truth is that you're all women who are quite well known and watched in the community. You're under 40. You have between you some 60 shows mm-hmm. at B Street Theater. So that gives you a voice and a platform. And now the three of you as women have created this new show.
Yeah.
And it's a first for yeah. B Street.
And almost everything you described for most people in our industry, woman, man, whatever, that's so rare. And
so
that's
rare.
What's amazing about B Street and Sacramento and this community that supports the arts in a way that I've been in, and we've all been in many different cities. This market loves the arts and gives us the opportunity to do this. Mm-hmm. And that exact unique experience of being in a company, having a career, being of someone who is recognizable in the community, given the opportunity to do a show, I mean, no other place in the country could you make something like that happen.
And we have yeah. amazing people guiding us. Buck Busfield, Dave Perini, our director. I mean, it's been an amazing experience.
Yeah, Dave's okay. been a big cheerleader for you.
And okay. because you yeah. said I was under 40, I hope everyone believes that in Sacramento. Because Beth said
she's
it.
Not.
Okay. Sure.
Does Dave tell you when he doesn't think you're funny or when something
yes.
doesn't work?
He does. Really? He'll just kind of stare at us.
Or when it's too, like, female too or
no,
too...
No, we're never too female never. For him. He doesn't
no,
pull that
in
card.
In fact, Tara is kind of like the only one I've ever
yeah.
had.
Yeah, I'm actually
I don't know if
the
we're female
conservative.
Enough.
Yeah. I have knee-jerk reactions
yeah.
to... I was like, are we being too feminine with
well, because
this?
Okay, I think at
wait,
heart
so now that I said that, what does that mean? What would it be to be too female?
Well, you'll find
it's
out.
Mostly, it's mostly blue humor.
Yeah, but I think...
too female is too blue humor.
Is it a comedy written by women for men? No.
Yeah, basically.
I mean, we do get, you know, we're not too female.
We're not sure. I mean, like, because I think people think of, I think Bridesmaids, that movie, was such a success because it kind of took that power away
gross.
From, like, Judd Apatow type movies where that's just the realm of males.
Yeah.
That sort of ridiculous humor that women are equally, if
absurd.
Not better at, you know. But yeah, Tara, I think in her heart, still just a sweet little Southern Baptist. And so she sees
how
things.
How dare you?
I know, right?
How dare you?
So you have these reactions. You're like, no, we
I
can't.
I needed to
you
take
can't.
A picture
say
of the
that.
Face. She
I
just
know.
Made,
I know.
Right?
I just feel my mom watching down and say, I just can't believe you would make those kind of jokes. That's just not very funny.
Yeah. And my mom says, I'm not making enough of them.
Right. And my mom's guilting me because she's Jewish.
Well, congratulations in advance for putting
you.
The show on
we
the stage. Good luck. I'm excited to. The preview shows continue right now, but the opening is Saturday night.
Sunday.
Night.
Sorry.
Oh, gosh.
Opening
Sunday.
Is Sunday night.
Yes.
So Saturday is still a preview show.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So Sunday night at 7. And then the show continues through,
yep.
I have my date, June 4th here. Yeah.
Yep.
Hooray. Cheers in advance.
Thank
good
you.
For all of
you.
You. It's
so
really
much.
Fun to have
thanks
you here.
Us.
Come back and you can share that 7-hour version with me in the hall.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. We'll send it to you.
Yeah.
Is Tara Sissom, Stephanie Elfholz, and Amy Kelly. Their original play is titled Treatment. It is on the B Street Theater main stage through, as I said, June 4th. There's more at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Steve Milne is standing by with more news. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Beth. A 15-year-old Tennessee girl who disappeared with her teacher more than a month ago is safe after being found at a remote cabin in Siskiyou County. The teacher, 50-year-old Tad Cummins, has been charged with kidnapping and taking a minor across state lines to have sex. Siskiyou County Sheriff says tips led to his deputies to the cabin where they spotted a car belonging to Cummins Wednesday night. He was arrested leaving the cabin yesterday. If you're in West Sacramento today, you may see a bunch of blue pinwheels placed on the grassy knoll along Industrial Boulevard. 1,054 pinwheels, to be exact. The figure represents the number of organ, eye, and tissue donors served by the agency Sierra Donor Services last year. A ceremony will be held this morning at the agency's site on Industrial Boulevard as part of National Donate Life Blue and Green Day. And Bill Murray is set to go on tour with the Chamber Music Trio. and he'll be kicking off the tour in Northern California. The actor is pairing up with cellist Jan Vogler for the project titled New Worlds, featuring a program of songs and literary readings. The highlights of the tour include songs from Van Morrison and West Side Story, and readings from Mark Twain and Walt Whitman. Music includes the works of Gershwin, Bach, and Schubert. The program will premiere in the U.S. on July 20th at Festival Napa Valley. Follow us on Twitter at Cap Radio News.
All right, thanks, Steve. Have a great weekend.
You're welcome.
You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. So I'm going to end the week with another story about artists and collaboration. Sacramento chef Michael Tiemann of Mother and Empress Tavern is also a musician. His band Drug Apartments has been playing shows. They have an EP they released in November. And Michael apparently had been a fan of the music of a singer-songwriter that some of you know named Justin Trosper. And Justin's 90s band is named Unwound, though he has a couple other, including Nocturnal Habits. So somehow Michael and Justin were introduced. They ended up playing some music together. Their friendship evolved. And tonight, the two have a pop-up food and music show in Sacramento. They'll be at the event together. They are here in the studio together. And they can add whatever they want to that story.
Yeah.
Hi, guys.
Hi. How are you?
So that's Hello. Michael Tiemann and Justin Trosper. Glad to have you here, too.
Glad to be here.
How was I on that version of the story?
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's good enough.
We've got, we've been acquainted for, 25 years.
We
met a long time ago.
But Michael, you were a fan first of the music, of Justin's music, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
We played shows in Sacramento.
Yeah, when we were
probably
in
93.
In your teens, you did?
Yeah.
Oh. Who introduced you?
I might have been out of my teens at that point.
You know what? I should add, this is a Facebook Live conversation. Yeah. So if people want to jump in and watch the two of you being able to retrack history here, that'd be great.
That's cool.
So I don't know. In Sacramento recently, I've been lucky enough to kind of come up with events and stuff. I don't do it every week. It's not a profession per se. So it's when I do come up with events, it's stuff I'm genuinely interested in. Mm-hmm. And mainly it's a friendship thing. Tonight, everybody that's involved with it, it's just a bunch of friends getting together.
Is open to the public.
Yes,
it is tonight
yes,
at Old Ironsides.
At Old Ironsides. It's
$5. Pop-up music and
food. I called it a stepmother because I've been cooking in Mother consistently lately, just being in the vegetarian world, and it's kind of a way that I could serve meat.
I am such an insane meat eater.
That's
I refuse to be involved in a vegetarian fest.
Yeah, no, but
so you go to Empress and have the bone marrow, right?
Yeah, I take bone marrow baths actually.
But the food is just a thing. The cool thing with Old Ironsides, they have a kitchen, and so I get to kind of connect all my
You're
worlds
not
together.
You're not playing music then
no,
tonight,
No, I'm just
Michael.
Doing
okay.
food. And Justin was coming down into town and now we're on the radio talking about it.
Yeah. Justin, I want to play some music from your band Unwound.
Mm-hmm.
So really 1991 to 2002, was mm-hmm. that the era of
yep.
the band? Okay. So this is a song called Look at a Ghost.
All right.
Thank you.
Justin Trosper and the band Unwound. I want to ask each of you to talk about the other in terms of their work and what they do. So, Michael, would you tell me about Justin's bands, that era when his music was getting really big, and what you think has been really successful for him? What's worked about what he does? Come on, this should be easy.
No, it is. I mean, it is kind of easy. Like, growing up in the punk scene, it was always high energy, fast stuff. And when I saw Unwound the first time, it was just the tempo was different, and everything was a little more. It was just thought about differently, so it was really fresh to me. I always liked the dissonance and the dark chord progressions, I guess. I always liked it. It just agreed with me. I don't know.
When that band ended, Justin, was it because you had a plan for the next thing you wanted to do?
You
wish?
At the time, I think I had plans, but life had other plans for me. Or I was responding to a new reality, I suppose. That the band broke up kind of not in the best way.
Yeah.
But that was a blessing in disguise or whatever. So I went on and did non-musical things. I basically didn't play music for a decade.
Hmm.
And then
were you in touch during that time?
No.
No, I didn't. Okay. I wasn't really in touch with anybody.
A dark night of the soul.
It was not so dark. But then I came back and started doing music probably about 5 years. 2011 and 12, okay. Around there.
A quiet night of the soul.
Yeah.
We'll call
so
it.
I went to school and I did other stuff and broadened my perspective on life. And then I got back into music again, and it's all going downhill. So the music basically has destroyed my life more than once, and now I'm here in Sacramento. And
and give you your opportunity to talk about what you see Michael doing with food and to some degree with music, but his career, which he really sharpened at Ella as the chef at Ella and then springboarding into his other restaurants. So about the time that you were coming out of that quiet period,
mm-hmm.
and you reconnected, he'd had a really growing, successful career. What do you see as working for him?
Well, I was... Like I said, I kind of dropped out. I haven't really been in touch with a lot of people for years. And then when we reconnected, I was like, holy moly, he's like a crazy, like, food star or something. And then he's like, oh, I have this restaurant, and all being, like, super casual. And then we were here a few months ago in November.
It was your
last
birthday.
Year, and on my birthday. And he's like, oh, well, you know, we'll do something for your birthday. I'll go to the restaurant. And me and Nocturnal Habits, the band, we all came down to the Empress, and we're like, oh, all right, this is like a pretty nice place. And then it was like the best fried chicken we'd ever had. And people in my band were like, oh, man, does this happen all the time? Because this was like our first little tour we did.
Sacramento.
This is
that's a great compliment, but when someone reacts like that to what you're doing, isn't it?
It was like kind of my.
That's the fun thing with food. I mean, food to music, there's kind of a similarity. I think it's because I enjoy both or doing both. Maybe because it's my fragile ego, and it's like I like to be told immediately like something was good, you know. So I'm constantly like, I think I'm driven towards.
Do you think he has a fragile ego, Justin?
He just said it.
So. Yeah, I said
so
it.
I don't know if I'm the judge of that.
No, I said it.
But
look into my soul.
You're listening to Michael Thiemann from Empress and Mother Restaurants and singer-songwriter Justin Trosper. So, Justin, let's play a clip from Nocturnal Habits so people can hear the more current music that you've been making.
Great.
This is a song called Ecophilia.
Escucha.
That's Echophilia from the band Nocturnal Habits, Justin Trosper's band that started out, I guess, as a music project, and Justin's here in the studio. I really like the sound of where your music has evolved to.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. Yeah.
Are you enjoying it?
I am. Yeah. I also enjoy the direction that I'm taking.
In life, you mean?
Well, I'll just backpedal. Just musically, it's good. But
I almost got there. I almost got into some of those layers.
Yeah.
But and then also tonight, what I'm doing is sort of a new partition musically. So, Nocturnal Habits started out as a recording project when I was at another band called Survival Knife, as a way to partition some songs that weren't necessarily appropriate for Survival Knife.
Mm.
And then it evolved, and to collaborate with a bunch of different people, and then it turned into this recording project with a bunch of different people playing on it. Sort of not really a solo record, but sort of a solo record. And then I was like, well, how am I going to do this? So I put together a band with people that played on the record. And now now the band is kind of usurping it's taking on its own life, you know. It's mm-hmm. what you call it, an emergent quality that's happening with the music. So I'm letting that happen, and now I'm doing this thing where I'm just playing by myself under my own name, which I said I would never do. But.
Oh, really?
Just well. Like, you know, very unpunk. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, look at me.
Yeah, seriously.
And my name is huge on the marquee. And it's the way we grew up.
Yeah.
I mean, we grew up in the same parallel scenes, you know, California to Washington
right.
State, but. It was the
it
same world.
It wasn't very self-marketing,
you know?
And promotion.
No,
like,
no.
It's like,
don't come to my show.
Yeah, no, that's why.
Like, what we're doing right now is like,
completely
we would have ran away, you know, so long. Yeah. And even now, we're
doing quite well.
We're forcing ourselves to do this. But
NPR noticed your music. One of your songs included in All Songs Considered. So do things like that register to you? Does that have meaning?
I mean, it's nice, you know, but I mean, people are like, you're on NPR. And then some people are like, no way, Justin Trosper's on NPR?
What does that say?
How could this be? You know, so I don't know the reality perception thing, I'm not sure about, but it's fine with me. It's fun.
Since we're playing music, I do have a clip from your band, Michael.
Okay.
And this is a song called Concrete Jungle from Drug Apartments, Michael Tiemann's band.
Oh.
So that's Michael's music, and we're finding we have a lot of connections here. Do the two of you have a music project together?
No.
Well, are we talking about presently or the very immediate future?
Let's talk about the very immediate future, because Michael said no, and you said,
kind of. We're going to mess around this weekend.
Yeah, that's the punk way of saying we're going to be messing around.
Event.
So we're not.
You mean
tonight?
Yeah,
well, he's up this weekend, and we're going to. Maybe spend some quiet moments
you
playing
know,
music.
Has anyone ever told you guys it's really tough to get a straight answer? Have you ever heard that?
Yes, it's completely intentional.
Okay, but yeah. I am going to say something that I'm very sure of. Tonight at 8 o'clock, you will both be at Old Ironsides.
Yes.
There's food by Michael Tiemann, fabulous food.
Yeah.
There's music, great music by Justin Trosper. And I can tell that the friendship runs far and wide. So I know there will be some project in the future. And you're saying that you'll come back, right?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
This was a success. Good job, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm also playing in Oakland tomorrow. Not tomorrow, but Saturday at the PRF Barbecue.
Okay, with Nocturnal Habits?
Or just you on your own? Just Justin. That's what I should call
Justin Trosper.
Just Justin.
Just Justin. All right. Thanks for joining us, everybody.
On my face.
Michael Thiemann and Justin Trosper. All the information is on the website. That's Insight for this week. I'm Beth Ruriak. The team is Jen Picard, Chris Remington, Cody Drabble, Jonathan Iestis, Caitlin Flaws, Mark Jones. Our executive producer is Joe Barr. Whew! Have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.